Hello and welcome to Stepping Into Truth, the podcast where we take on the subjects of race, gender, and social justice. I'm your host, Omkari Williams, and I'm very glad you're here with me today. So here we are in the middle of a pandemic, and you are choosing to spend time with me. I'm really grateful. This is the second conversation during a pandemic that I've had, and I'm glad to be talking today with crafter and activist Betsy Greer. Especially in this unprecedented time, it feels important to connect to things that ground us. Merging craft and activism seems particularly on point right now. Betsy Greer has been writing about how craft and activism intersect since 2003. Curious about how our individual skills and interests can help us make both granular and larger scale changes in ourselves as well as others, she aims to share examples of how it's been done in the past and how it's done in the present and how she hopes it will continue into the future. I'm so happy to welcome Betsy to the podcast. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going. It's like, how's it going? How's that pandemic thing going? Oh, yeah, there's that. I know.
I'm like pandemic and anxiety work really well together.
So. Don't they just, oh, I know. I've been very careful about keeping my stash of wine at a certain level. It's like, under no circumstances can you run out of wine? Because that glass of wine at the end of the day is my ritual, and it sort of helps me just sort of sink into feeling more normal. And whatever it takes is fine. It's like, okay, that's what we're doing right now. So I'm really happy, actually, to talk to you in this particularly weird time, because in an odd way, it feels like your book was kind of made for this time, because a lot of us have a lot more time on our hands than we normally would have, which means we have more time to do creative pursuits. And at the same time, it feels like being involved in activism is going to be super important, because on the other side of this, we need to change things. We need to do things a bit differently. And figuring that out feels like a prime thing for us to do. So I wanted to start by just asking you, for yourself, how is this kind of activism showing up for you in this time of physical distancing?
Well, I feel like whenever anything major happens, I don't have the best reaction at first. I feel like I kind of have to hunker down and kind of see what's happening and get a feeling for the lay of the land, and then kind of come up for air. So lately, I've just been looking at what everyone is doing and watching and seeing what kind of response is needed. And so it's weird. And my own creative pursuits have kind of taken a weird turn. Like, I don't really cook or bake, but I've been doing that. And then I've been putting together a letter writing project called Dear Textiles, which I want to see if people, I wrote a letter to textiles and kind of what they've meant to me and how they've given me strength and about their activist history and my own life and my, you know, other people that came before me. So I feel like right now it's coming together in a weird kind of disparate way, but I'm trying to trust the process and trust what I need to do in order to find my way out of it, because we're all kind of in this together and we're all kind of finding our own way.
First off, yes, I mean, I completely agree. We are each finding our way through this whole experience. I am fascinated by the idea of your new project, because one of the things I definitely knew I wanted to talk with you about was textiles and clothing and how this experience of being in this global pandemic and looking at the places that are shut down, you know, stores and manufacturing facilities, it's really making me think about the things we buy and what do we need and our connection to those things. And I was thinking about clothing and how we've become a society that buys clothing with the intention of really throwing it away pretty quickly. So I'm very curious and would love to hear more about what this textiles project, the letters about textiles, is.
Sure. Well, it started, I mean, I am like the slowest human ever to come up with projects. Like when I started writing about crafts and activism, it was maybe like 2 years before I put anything online about it. It just has to kind of work its way through my brain. And so about 2 years ago, I first thought about how I wanted to collect stories. I was working through a history in my own life with assault and trying to think about how I wanted to get other people's stories and kind of how they work through it. And so that was my first idea. And then I was like, that never really sat well. And so it's kind of gone through many different iterations. And then basically the thread through all that is how I found textiles. And that was a way of working through my own trauma history of finding touch and safe things to touch and safe things to make and the slowness of the stitches. And then finding all this history throughout, you know, almost every continent of how people have worked through really rough things through textiles. And I was like, the idea kind of percolated, I said, well, I wonder if, you know, I write kind of my feelings about textiles and how they've helped me through researching them and making them. And then maybe other people will want to share their stories as well, because we have our stories about making textiles. We have familial cultural memories of other people making textiles and what those people meant to us. I recently bought a vintage quilt off of Etsy and for my bed and thought about how this beautiful object, and I have no idea who made it, and how we're as makers all part of a long line of people that came before us, and what do they have to teach us? And I feel so much strength of knowing that as I embroider or knit or something and have, you know, like a sad feeling or a joyous feeling or whatever, that someone else has been in this exact same position making something similar at some point in time. And so they did that in the past. I'm doing it now. Probably someone else in the world is doing the same thing as I'm doing now. And then that will continue in the future. So it's just about kind of the lineage of strength that goes through textiles, because they are things of perseverance and strength and story.
I love that. I love that. And it actually makes me think of one of the stories that you share in your book, Craftivism. There's that story called Crafting Resistance. And Otto von Busch wrote this particular story. And he references Gandhi in there and his leading the Indian people to use homespun cloth in order to bypass the British monopoly on textiles in India. And when I read that, I thought, first off, I had vaguely known that, but I had never really thought about that and what a powerful thing that was to do and how he took back something that belonged to the Indian people and used that as a tool of resistance and a tool of independence. And so when you're talking about using textiles and engaging with them as a way to heal trauma, that really lands with me. Because being able to have that safe, creative space to feel your way, literally feel your way through something, seems like such a gift. And it's a gift we often don't give ourselves in all the hustle and bustle that we do. And here we are now, and there's nowhere to hustle to. So to take that time and just engage with, whether it's a piece of cloth or yarn, or even if it's not a textile, if it's an art project of some other sort, feels really important. So yeah, that's kind of amazing. Thank you for that.
Well, see, I mean, I think that one of the things that I get emails about or have gotten a lot of emails about in the past are like, my project hasn't gone viral. What do I do? Right. So I think that when you have like a new project idea, I think it's really interesting the thought process that goes into it now. And so I always try to think about, I'm like, well, like, what if I put this project out and no one wants to participate? And then I was like, well, it's okay. It'll just be my letter. And maybe if it's just my letter on a website, then that's okay. But it's out there, and it's out there for someone else maybe to take something from.
And I think, yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. I was just going to say that I think that, you know, there are 8 billion people on this planet. And so there's got to be at least 5 people. At least 5.
Great. Yeah, we'll see.
But I also think that that actually makes me think of something else that I think is really important, which is we've gotten into this state of mind where we feel like what we are doing needs to go viral in order for it to have worth.
Right.
And I think that we need to drop that. That's my opinion. I'm just going to say it. We need to drop that idea, because if we only proceed from that perspective, two things. One is we're always doing it with an eye to what someone else is going to think about it rather than our own satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And the other side of that is that we may not give something enough time to find its footing and to find its people and to make the impact that it might make, because we kind of kill it off too soon because we feel like, well, that didn't work. And that feels unfortunate to me. I think one of the things we can take from this time of enforced isolation to some degree, I mean, we're not being told to isolate, but most of us are in our homes with a limited number of people, is that we get to slow down and engage differently than we do on a day-to-day basis in non-pandemic times. And that there are lessons to be learned. And maybe one of the lessons is we can just do something because we like it. It doesn't actually have to go viral.
Right. And I think you bring up the notion of worth. And I think that is a really important component to any kind of project, right? Like, because if you come to something like, so my project, like my affirmation project that I did was stitching when I stitched affirmations and left them out for people in the public to find. They have come at like at activism in a different way, because I think it's important to make sure that people feel worthy of their power, of their strength, of their voice. And so I guess I try to come at it from a more granular perspective than a lot of other people. So the idea of going viral is kind of like, well, you know, it's not really even on my radar at all. And so it's been an interesting way to think about it, and then have people contact me and be like, but I want to go viral. And I'm like, but that's not really the point. I mean, yeah. Unless you're trying to get like millions of followers or something. And then I think that it has to be something that's authentic. And I think that worth kind of weaves its way kind of through all that. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you don't think it's a worthy project, if you don't think your voice is worthy, then how much are you going to be able to stand behind it?
That's a really good point, because I do think there is that impulse sometimes to just do something because we think it might be successful. But most things take a really long time. And so if we're not committed to it independently of whether it's successful or not, if we're not committed to it for our own internal experience of satisfaction in whatever way that manifests, then we can really get sidetracked easily. And it's, to me, it's a very similar thing to any kind of social justice engagement, where things likely aren't going to change fast. It may seem like they change fast, but the backstory is of a long slog, and all of a sudden you hit a tipping point as a general rule. Even though it looks on the outside like, oh, that was a really quick change, there's usually a really long time behind it. And right. I think that with crafting, we sort of get to engage in that sort of slow process of creating whatever it is and then bring it out into the world. And that's not really dissimilar from the process of changing a system we don't like, or making a difference in someone's life in what might feel like a small way, but might have really extensive ripples that we never are aware of. And, you know, when you're doing your craft, whether it's quilting or it's painting, whatever it might be, if you're doing that and there are other people who are engaged in that, then there's that community. And it's in community that activism really lives. Activism kind of doesn't really live just as one person. It needs the fuel of other people behind it. And I think that crafting is a way to engage people sort of on both sides of their brains in a way. You know, you have that textile side or the painting side or whatever your craft is. And then you have the conversation about the problem in your town or the problem that you see in the world and how you bring those two things together. So I'd love to hear what your experience with that kind of thing is.
Yeah, I think that one of the great things about textiles is that it's something that, you know, textiles happen all over the world, right? So they connect us at so many different points, whether it's through something someone in our family did or it's something that we're doing or learning or teaching or whatever. And I think that if we, you know, do projects in public or we take things with us along the way, then we have access to so many different people and stories. And textiles have this, like knitting, for example, it's really, I found it really therapeutic in a lot of ways and also really social in a lot of ways because I could knit by myself and be totally fine. I could knit while I was talking on the phone. I could knit in public. And people, you know, would usually come up to me when I was doing it a fair amount and tell me stories and talk to me. And so I used to joke that having a craft in public is like having a dog or a baby. Everyone feels like it's okay to come talk to you.
Yeah.
And so when people plan craft projects, I mean, I think that they do have so many different people, you know, people in different cultures have kind of craft background. They work really well to working with lots of different types of people. And then when you are knitting with somebody else, I feel like my friend Garth Johnson talked about how craftivism is like a Trojan horse in a sense, because you can have difficult conversations while you're making something because you don't have to look at the person that you're talking to. You can look down. There can be pauses, whereas that might be considered rude in normal conversation. When you stitch something that's political and you put it up in a public space or a gallery or a home or something, you're inviting this juxtaposition between something that is seen as soft, like textiles literally is in a lot of cases is soft, and something that is, quote, hard, like politics or divisive. And so you're kind of changing the narrative of what someone thinks craft is or what someone thinks politics is. And for me, it's having that, you know, cognitive dissonance kind of moment that people ask about what the piece is or what you're doing. And that also, when you have that same kind of cognitive dissonance or juxtaposition, that someone's going to take a photo and put it online because it's different than maybe a sign. Not that those things don't work, because, you know, and the signs do work for sure. And especially on like getting, you know, pressure on a situation for change, but having kind of a unique handmade something creates conversations in that might otherwise not happen.
I am also a knitter and I could not agree more with what you just said, because I have had difficult conversations while knitting, and it's true. You know, you're looking down at what you're doing, and there's also a different kind of pacing to a conversation when you're also doing a craft that seems to take some of the angst out of it. And so that's a really good point that I hadn't thought of in that way before. But yes, and I like the Trojan horse analogy a lot. I'm going to think about that next time. Next time I need to have a difficult conversation, I'm going to make sure that both people are knitting, even if I have to teach the other person how to knit first. So yeah, that's my new thing. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. So something else I wanted to bring up is that, especially right now, so here we are, we're in this situation where all of a sudden millions of people have been dumped out of their jobs really abruptly. And the whole financial thing is incredibly uncertain for millions and millions of people. And that's hugely stressful. And when I was thinking about this conversation that we were going to have, I was thinking about how craft on a one-to-one basis is really disruptive of 21st century capitalism, because craft is so often exchanged, and whether for someone else's craft or a service, people have no problem doing that. You know, yes, craft is exchanged for money as well often, but people really will say, you know, well, I'll make this thing for you if you'll do X for me and provide a service for them. And I really appreciate that, because it feels to me like one of the things we're up against right now is figuring out how to have an economic system that actually works for the majority rather than the minority, and that this crisis is showing us in stark relief the places where our economic system is not working. And I don't know whether, you know, capitalism, socialism, I don't really care which ism it is. What I care about is how do we create a more equitable society? And I feel like if we got back to a dynamic where we were trading goods and services in a different way, that might actually help us do that. I mean, it's not for everything or everyone, but it feels like there's something in there. And I'm just curious as to your take on that.
Well, I feel like with craft, like there is, you know, like yarn can be really expensive, and it is a lot cheaper to go to Target and buy a sweater for $10 than it is to buy $80 worth of yarn and spend a month working on it, a sweater.
Right.
And so there is like a kind of like, you know, who has the money, who has the time to make stuff. But I think that I have kind of seen examples of people doing kind of some bartering over the past couple of weeks of like, I have this skill, you know, asking for help in one area, and someone comes forth and says, I can help you with that. Can you help me with this? You know, and then people like on Instagram being like, I am, you know, selling my drawings for this amount of money to pay up for my rent or whatever. And I think that I've seen those things, those kind of posts before, but it brings on a different resonance now when, yeah. I think what it was it like 3.3 million unemployment claims or something
last week.
Right? Yeah. And I think that this is such like a gigantic thing that's going to ripple through society for such a long time that maybe, you know, in some cases it is worth kind of looking at what skills you have and perhaps seeing how you can use them. Because, you know, if you happen to have a giant yarn stash with like a lot of knitters have, then maybe, you know, you can barter that for something that you really need. And I've seen a lot of farmers of my local area kind of bartering for different things and swapping. And so, yeah, I think there is a space for that. I mean, I think at the beginning of craft, like when it became popular around like 2000, the early 2000s, then people were like, we're going to create a new economy and blah, blah, blah. And that.
Yeah, that hasn't happened.
No, and I don't think it's going to.
And, no.
Yeah, it's just not. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And then, you know, that would be an awesome new world. But so far it hasn't happened. But yeah, I think that we can all look at our skills and maybe use those to help us in different ways, depending on our situations and the amount of time that we have.
I think the other part of it that feels important to me is that it also is about that actually valuing our skills and recognizing that we may have a skill that doesn't seem broadly useful, but is specifically useful, and to just value that. And it doesn't mean you're going to be able to pay your rent with it or make a living with it, but maybe you can make your life a little bit better with it and expand your community because of that skill. And I think that that's something that people are sort of going into themselves and saying, what have I got that I can offer? How can it be of service to someone? How can I make this be of service for myself if I need that? And that a little bit more of that resourcefulness is coming out. And any way we can feel less out of control in a situation is probably a good thing. So I feel like that's not bad, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of mental health. I mean, I already deal with like depression and anxiety just on a normal everyday, but I feel like I've been reading a lot of articles about anxiety and depression and what's going to happen over the next week, month, year. And I think that sometimes, you know, crafts have been devalued, but there have been, you know, studies done that show that it can benefit our mental health through just sitting and stitching and the regulation of the breath and the meditation, the mindfulness of it, and then the way it can connect us to others. Like you may have a skill that you want to learn with knitting and then you ask your friends and then, you know, maybe you can't sit with them right now, but you could maybe learn over YouTube. And I think that craft has this quiet way of bringing these benefits that we don't always fully recognize. And it's important. And I think it's going to be important to think about over the time to come.
However long that may be.
Right.
I mean, I took up knitting because a friend of mine told me that I needed a hobby. I was really mad at her when she said that. But she wasn't wrong. And it was so soothing for me to just teach myself how to knit. And it's something that now that we're in this time of having more time and it's incredibly stressful, that the knitting, you know, just being able to kind of even mindless things that I probably wouldn't knit otherwise, but I don't necessarily feel like I've got the bandwidth to tackle something super complicated. So just doing something that I can do without thinking about it a whole lot has been really helpful to just keep me on something of an even keel, because it's weird out there right now. So an even keel feels like an accomplishment, you know, just maintaining steady feels like a real accomplishment when there's so much coming at us all the time and there's so much uncertainty. That actually brings me to something else that your book made me think about. And it was one of the stories in your book was about this woman who used art as a way of inspiring people to clean up the beaches around her, and that she would take some of the found trash objects on the beaches in her area and turn them into art. And I thought that was such an incredibly creative thing to do, because I mean, cleaning up a beach is hard. It's harder work than I think people often realize. But I thought, what a cool thing to do, because then at least on the other side, you're taking some of that and making something out of it. And I'm curious about her story and what you felt about it when you were writing her story.
Well, I feel like I just love hearing people's reasons for things. And when people reuse stuff and recycle stuff, it's really inventive. And that's why when I first started writing about craftivism, I kept it really open and was like, it's about using your skills to create a better world. And so, you know, people have different interests, whether they're environmental or social or personal or raising awareness about an issue. And so I'm just really inspired by the ways that people take their personal interests and their person and their own skills and use it to create change. And I think that sometimes maybe a project isn't super public. It's just for yourself. And sometimes it can be, you know, okay, what did you learn from this? And that's really important. So projects like that, like maybe like, ew, that's, you know, beach trash or whatever. that's gross. But then it's, you know, then someone else saw this value in it. And that's really important.
Yeah, I was fascinated because honestly, if I was doing beach cleanup, I would just be picking things up and throwing them in a bag and taking the bag to the nearest trash can as quick as I could. It wouldn't occur to me that those objects could become art. And I love that it occurred to someone else, and that, you know, that they then went out and did this thing. And it also inspired other people to come and help with the beach cleanup, which is a win-win for everyone. So yeah, it's kind of cool when people see things that you just never imagine. And you think, oh, huh. And you just kind of stop for a moment and think, that's really interesting. And I think it expands our ability to imagine what we might do with things. So I really liked that. That was one of my favorite stories.
It's people are amazing. And if anyone's thinking about doing a project, I would definitely say to keep it open, because that, you know, open in a way, because we need constraint, right? We need constraint on one end to kind of, you know, parameters to move around in, but also, sorry, I just totally lost my train of thought too, which is really bad. But anyway, and but yeah, we need parameters, but we also need to keep, oh, I got it. Woo! And we have to, and I swear these days, it's,
I'm telling you.
Yeah. And so we also need to have some kind of creativity in it too. So yeah. So anytime I left a project open like that, then you are like, wow, I never would have thought of making art from this or from that or craft or whatever. And it's been an amazing kind of thing, because my background is in social science. So for me, when I started writing about craftivism, there were only 4 hits on Google, and they were from a workshop from the Church of Craft. And I was like, I have this opportunity to put this word online and see where it goes, and how it's used, and who contacts me if I don't really talk about it or publicize it or whatever. And the same kind of things have extended through my own projects of just letting them be and seeing what happens and how people interpret them in their own way, because that is the magic of activism or creativity in general.
Yeah, that's wow. I'm surprised that there were only 4 hits. That's kind of wild. It's, you know, I was, as you were speaking, I was remembering that when we went to the first Women's March in 2017, that at the time I was living in Savannah, and there's this artist there, Scott Stanton, and he paints under the name Panhandle Slim. And he volunteered to paint signs for every woman from Savannah who was going to DC for the march. And I think he wound up painting something like 300 different signs. And his signs are so cool. They're different images of people. And he did for the Women's March, he did images of women with different quotes. So he had quotes from Audre Lorde and quotes from Michelle Obama and quotes from Shirley Chisholm and just any female feminist icon you can think of. And he did 300 of these. And when we were in DC, someone from the Smithsonian saw some of these signs and was so intrigued that they wound up putting one of his signs, at least one, I think, in the Smithsonian. And he uses his craft as a way to make a political statement. And it's incredibly powerful. I mean, you see these things and they are so cool, and they're not polished. They're just rough and really, really impactful. And whenever I look at his work, and I have 2 of his, I kept all the posters that my friends had, and I framed one of them. And then when we were leaving Savannah, he made posters for us, and I have one of them in my office. And whenever I look at it, I feel that energy of powerful people and how individuals can really make a difference, and how he made an impact for the 300 of us who came up from Savannah to DC. And it made a difference. It, you know, it was a connection point for us, but it was also a point of people around us who saw us, took notice, and it was encouraging for them. It was just amazing. And so I really think that there's an enormous power to craft and art, and that you can make a political statement with that without actually having to do anything that's going to be aggressive, you know, because people, that turns people off. And this was just look at this art, look at the statement, and engage with it however you will. And I really appreciate that about craft and craft as a tool of art, of activism.
Yeah, I mean, it is so beautiful. But I think that it's funny, while you were talking about that, the weirdest image popped up in my head. And so I am from North Carolina. And when you go to the beach, this is going to sound really random, but hopefully I'll circle back. But okay. Like sometimes when you go down to the beach and you drive through these towns where there's just nothing in the town at all, like the town has been decimated by, you know, our modern life and everything, and there's nothing. And then you'll drive by and then on these little roads and there'll be some old person, usually they're older. I don't want to, you know, generalize, but usually sitting in a chair in their front yard, just like waving at like everybody that walks by, everybody that drives by. And smiling. I don't know. It seems to be always when I'm going to the beach. I don't know why. And so you think about this tiny act and how much on this kind of boring drive where there's just really nothing and tobacco fields and whatnot. And then you have this one person that's just waving. And you think about this momentary interaction and what that does to your day, right? It's such a small, small thing. And so that person, I assume, is just probably bored and is like, I'm just going to sit on my lawn and wave. And then, so I guess what I'm saying is that we all can show up in our own ways. It may not be craft. It may be doing something, you know, that is authentic to you and whatever that expression is. And I think what is important to me is making sure that I at least try, you know, to make people's days better, to make my own day better and in an authentic way, because that kind of, I'd like to think that energy benefits all things around me too. And because we do things and we may not think they're very big, but we don't know who's paying attention.
I love that. And I actually think that's a perfect place to end this conversation. It's, you know, we don't know who's paying attention and we don't know what the ripple effect of our action will be. But even if there's no ripple beyond us, to do something that brings us peace and joy right there creates a ripple that makes the world a better place, because happy people are just better to have around. So, thank you so much, Betsy. Thank you for your book and having this conversation with me and for just making it that craft has a space in the world that meets activism and the two can happily coexist. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for wanting to talk to me. I think that what you're doing and exploring different types of activism is really important, because everybody, you know, all activism isn't the same and it all benefits different. Every type of activism benefits a different type of person where they are, maybe in their life, one type may fit. And then at one point, and then 20 years later, another type will fit. So you're kind of exploring that, which is really rich and good and amazing and what we need right now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's really, really nice to hear. You actually exactly nailed why I'm doing this. So I appreciate that. And I hope that at some point, someday, we get to meet in person in non-pandemic times, maybe on a beach in North Carolina.
That would be fantastic.
Okay, thanks. And thank you for listening. We are all trying to navigate the uncertainty of this time as best we can. One thing we can do is return to hobbies and pastimes that we might have let fall away. Whether you pick up an old craft hobby, pick up a book, or reconnect to something else entirely, find something that feeds you. Creating a ritual or practice can help us all stay on an even keel. Also, right now, we're all doing the best we can. Some days that might not feel like it's our best or what used to be our best. It's okay. We can try again tomorrow. Stay healthy and be kind to others and to yourself. And I will be back with another episode of Stepping into Truth very soon.